I'm trying to resist the urge to bounce up and down the aisle, so I'm doing that before the end of the sermon. But I want to share some thoughts with you about it. We hear it often at weddings. We have sentimentalized it. We have used it to fit our concepts of human behavior. And we've made it a goal for our behavior. What is it? Paul's love chapter, 1 Corinthians 13. It's a passage we know so well that somehow throughout the ages, we've lost some of the power that Paul initially wrought among the Corinthians when they first heard those words. But to understand this passage more clearly, and perhaps to refocus our own understanding of what Paul is telling us, I think it would do well for us first to understand a little bit about Paul. I asked those of you who were here last Sunday during the snowstorm to have a little bit of patience. I'm likely to repeat some of what we did last week, but just consider that a reminder. Who is Paul? Paul was not one of the first 12 disciples. Paul only came to belief several years after Jesus rose from the dead. Paul actually was responsible for persecuting some of the early Christians, and he was ruthless in that. And then one day on the road to Damascus, Paul had a vision. He encountered the risen Christ in a real and powerful way that changed his life completely. We talk about conversion as moving totally in the, going in one direction, turning around and going in the other direction. That was Paul. Of the many things that Paul was overwhelmed with as a result of that conversion was his amazing belief and absolute certainty that the Spirit of God was within him and that the Spirit of God had given him a clarity of vision that he had not come anywhere near up to that point. Paul was so filled with the Spirit that after 3 years of training and understanding who this Jesus was that so powerfully affected his own life, he decided to go and to share that in the world. And so he traveled throughout the Mediterranean, along the Roman roads, and stopping off at some of the largest cities in the Roman Empire, cities of Galatia and Thessalonica, Athens, Rome, and Corinth. And in each place he spoke in the marketplaces and drew people by his personality and by his deep understanding and presence of the Spirit within him. People wanted to know, what is it about this man? And out of that, Christian communities began to grow. And what Paul would do is he would build a community, establish leadership, and then move on after a couple of years to the next town, the next city, create a new community. But each one was like a child to him. And so he remained in contact through letters. And every once in a while he would find out that something was going on that he needed to talk about, that he needed to respond to. And so he would send a letter back to those congregations. Many of those letters we have today as part of our New Testament. And the challenge when we read those lessons is, first of all, to understand that Paul didn't write those letters for us. He didn't write those letters to be heard 2,000 years later. Just like when we write a letter to someone, we don't write it to be read for eternity. It is to a particular person in a particular place for a particular reason. There's a hidden understanding and knowledge that the people share that's not expressed in the letter because it just is there. It's understood between both parties. And so it becomes a challenge for us to try to understand, what is Paul saying in these letters? To whom was he writing? What was he writing about? What was the reason for his writing? And more importantly, perhaps, what was his message? And that's the challenge we have when he was called to write a letter to the Corinthians. As Paul heard through the grapevine what was going on in Corinth, he felt he had to respond. He knew the congregation well. It was a powerful congregation. It was wealthy, and it was one of the most wealthy cities of the Roman Empire, Corinth. Corinth was the center of all trade routes from east and west. Everything went through Corinth, sort of like a modern-day London. It was a place of wonderful breadth of power, of culture. Everybody met in Corinth. And the church at Corinth reflected the city. It was full of lots of very, very powerful individuals. People who had deep faith, people who had responded to the God Spirit, and the Spirit was alive in that congregation. There was a deep spiritual presence that led many to speak in what people considered in the early church the tongues of angels. And it was expected that people who got this gift had a very unique connection with the Spirit of God. There were people in the congregation who had deep theological knowledge and wisdom and were able to debate with non-Christians and draw people into the Christian fold. There were people of great faith and faith healers who believed in the power of prayer. And many miracles were being wrought in this congregation at Corinth. And many, therefore, were great witnesses to their faith. Some were even martyred. It was a congregation like no other. Wealthy, powerful, faith-driven. And yet, there was a problem. What Paul heard about the Corinthian community was that people's gifts had, for all intents and purposes, gone to their heads. They had been so wrapped up in their gifts, in their self-importance, that they'd lost something about the meaning of what community was all about. And Paul replies. And one of the things he did in our reading from 1 Corinthians last week was create the sense of a body, that the church is like a body and every member of the body is important if the body is to function properly. And if any one part of the body doesn't function properly, the whole body is affected. A body can't do certain things without arms or legs. A body can't do things without a digestive tract. Here's the biology teacher in me. Without the circulatory system or the nervous system. And if any of those begin to go awry, the entire body is affected. And Paul says that's exactly what Christian community is all about. Each of us is given gifts. Each of us participates in the whole body. And each of us is important. And for Paul, the Corinthian congregation had lost sight of that. Wrapped up in their own abilities, their own gifts, their own sense of aggrandizement. And as a result, as we read between the lines, what Paul notices is that the interpersonal relationships are beginning to deteriorate. Some being boastful and arrogant led to others feeling envious and resentful. There was a lack of kindness and patience within the congregation. And instead of being joyful, People were irritable, rude, quick to accuse. In other words, the Corinthian congregation was focusing and functioning like many of the relationships in many of the communities that you and I belong to. It's human nature. And it happens anytime we begin to focus on ourselves instead of turning our focus outward. And Paul, in trying to find a way to respond to the Corinthians and get them to relook at their faith and correct them, get them back on the track, as he's sitting there and running through this litany and talking about all of the issues that are going on, he suddenly gets an idea. A thought comes to him that is dear to his heart. And it probably drew him back to why he became a Christian in the first place. Paul realized what they lacked was love. It's at this point I'm going to have to take about 2 minutes to introduce you to a little Greek to understand the significance of what Paul's going to say. When Paul says that God is love, or when he says love is at the heart of all community, he could have chosen one of three words in Greek to express that idea of love, of connection with another human being. One of them is eros, which is that passionate involvement with another person. It's a high intensity emotional connection. The other is philios, which is more of a warm affection. Often we experience that in terms of family, sometimes close friends. Friendship would be philios. Both of them are emotionally based. And then there's agape, which is what we call platonic. Agape does not depend on emotion. Agape love is love that comes from the act of giving yourself completely and totally to another person or to an idea. To an insight. It can happen to people when they give their loyalty to a nation or to a political ideal. It can happen in many ways. But what it is more based on commitment and faithfulness than emotion. And that is the love Paul talks about. That the love that Paul is talking about in community is one that is not based on how we feel toward one another, but rather the commitment we share in being open to God's love. And God's love is the root of all of that. What Paul says is what God gave us in Jesus is showed God's love for us, and it's that love that God offers for every one of us. And that's where it starts for Paul. And that's what Christian community is about for Paul, of opening yourself up to experience God's love as he did. And so let me just read portions of the reading today with a little bit of twist and see if this changes the way you understand it. If I speak in the tongues of mortals and angels, but do not have God's love, I'm a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I have all prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and knowledge, and I have faith so as to remove mountains, but don't have God's love, I'm nothing. And if I give away all my possessions and hand over my body so that I may boast, but do not have God's love, I am nothing. God's love is patient, kind, not envious or boastful or arrogant or rude. It doesn't insist on its own way, and it's not irritable or resentful. God's love does not rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices in the truth. God's love believes all things, bears all things, hopes all things, endures all things. It's God's love that never ends. You see, the love Paul's talking about is not love that you and I offer one another. It's not human-based love. It is God's love for us. Paul is telling the Corinthian congregation, open yourself up to God's love. Let it fill you. Let it totally change you and transform you. And the behavior will follow. You're so focused on your own selves that you haven't fully opened yourself up to God's patience with you and God's kindness to you. Because, Corinthian congregation, you need it. And God is there to love you. And in that, you can be redeemed. And in that, you can be transformed. Now, as I said, I didn't believe that Paul wrote a letter 2,000 years ago for us to read in church on a Sunday morning. But sometimes Paul hits the nail on the head. And rather than making this chapter something where from human effort we try to do our best to love others that are we consider unlovable, maybe what we should do is take a different tact. Maybe we should listen to what Paul is calling us to today, is to open our hearts to God's presence, to allow the love of God, which is patient and kind, who has given everything for you. Just go back and read our opening hymn again. God's love is unbounded, and it's for us. Paul called the Corinthian congregation to make a change. Somebody asked, did they? I only have one response that maybe is not a good one, but it's the only one I have. They saved his letter. I encourage all of us to come back and read this letter over and over again as a reminder of the great gift that we've received in our Lord Jesus Christ, the one who loves us beyond all measure, the one who loves us to death. May that love transform us and lead us into the future. Amen.